Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Weighing in with soybeans and a baby show straight out of Norbert, Missouri, we have Soybean Festival. From Hayward, Wisconsin, at 73 years young with the world's largest muskie statue, put it together for Muskie Fest. Finally, packing a punch with fire dancing and a pet costume contest, the Roseau, Minnesota Fall Harvest Fest. One of these festivals could win $100,000 in the Cenex Hometown Throwdown. You decide. Cast your vote at CenexHometownThrowdown.com. Cenex, powered locally.
Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show. You know, our mission is to serve you with advice and information that empowers you to make better financial decisions in your life. Today's episode, I want to talk about something that makes me very nervous. The percentage of Americans who are past 65 who are still carrying a mortgage. And wow, we got to talk about chatbots, a form of AI that is maybe not so accurate. There was a celebrated case recently involving Air Canada that is quite instructive, where it could cost you your money trusting AI. But right now, I want to tell you, new data out from the Housing Research Center that sometimes I quote from, that's based at Harvard University, finds that more than 40% of homeowners past age 65 are carrying a mortgage right now. That's way, way, way higher than historically what was the case. When you talk with financial planners, they will generally advise that you be on a trend line to be mortgage debt free at the time that you're hitting retirement age, so that you don't have to worry that your house is at risk if you have some kind of income reversal in retirement or in later years. You know, it's more nuanced right now, though, with the mortgage thing, because a lot of people refied mortgages when the Federal Reserve was artificially manipulating interest rates down following the banking scandals. And so there are people out there, like somewhere about a quarter of people with mortgages have ultra low mortgages that are in the threes or below. Our own Krista has a mortgage at 1.875%. And
a 15-year.
15-year. So holding on that mortgage is just fantastic. That's why there's so few used homes for sale right now, because people can't move because they go from one of these low mortgages that 25% of people have, like you, or around 4% or so, which a lot more people have, to something that's maybe around 6.5% or 7%. So I get it that if you just were speaking in isolation, having that mortgage in retirement years is not a good idea. Right now, it's a harder call, but still risky, because, yeah, you may have a loan at an ultra low interest rate, but you have a loan. One of the things that we hear from time to time that just upsets me no end is when somebody's able to take out a mortgage or do a refi in their late 70s or into their 80s. I mean, that's just crazy stuff, because of the fact you're carrying all that debt. And are you going to eat? Are you going to pay the mortgage? Are you going to end up homeless if times get tough? I mean, these are hard, hard things. So I want to make it clear that it is a danger signal that we're approaching close to half of people mid-60s and later carrying a mortgage. There are the individual circumstances that if you're, let's say your loan's at 3% and you're earning 5%+ on your savings, then you've got that spread and it's like, okay, but what if you have that mortgage and you have no savings? In addition, you're still paying out a mortgage and you have no cushion in your life. So there's a point to this that I want to make clear. Krista has a 15-year mortgage with, I don't know, 11 years left, 9 years left?
11.
11 years left. Krista will have no mortgage way before Krista's not working. That's the thing, is that by taking out that 15, it meant that you would not be sitting there with a mortgage hanging over you way into later life. And it's so routine now that people, regardless of what age they take out a mortgage, think about taking out a mortgage at 50 years old. If you take out a 30-year loan, you still have a mortgage till age 80. Take out a 15-year loan, at least you're done by age 65. So remember, these obligations you enter into, you can't take lightly because they stick with you. And with a 15-year loan, you pay effectively much less total interest over the years and build equity up steadily. And equity is going to be more important now because home prices are not going to escalate moving forward like they did so heavily from 2012 to 2 years ago. That 10-year cycle was an anomaly. It was an unusual pattern. And you can't count on home prices being the booster shot that covers taking out an ultra-long-term mortgage.
All right, we'll go to some questions. This one is from Michael in North Carolina. I recently had an interesting experience with a cell phone company's customer no service. After going through the torture of four representatives, I was finally connected to a supervisor. She was a supervisor with their fraud center. I told her up front that I was going to record our conversation. She immediately stated that their policy doesn't allow that. I asked her, "So you can record me, but I can't record you?" She said she was dropping the call and hung up. That is a direct violation of my consumer rights. I live in North Carolina, which is a one-party consent state. What are the agencies you recommend to file a complaint about this violation?
So, Michael, couple of things here. First, one-party permission. I should explain that. One-party permission has been interpreted as applying, you have the right in a one-party permission state to record a conversation with somebody else in your state without notifying them. On the other hand, you would be talking with a call center who knows where across state lines that may require two-party permission. But as a practical matter, lawyers, roll your eyes now. If you were to record that conversation without informing and you said, "Well, I thought I was okay because I live in a one-party state," I think you'd be fine. But yes, you're right. Companies say, "We're recording you, but no, it's not okay for you to record us." I mean, it's such an abusive thing, which is why when I have a customer no service problem, I like using the chats now, which we're going to talk about more later, because there's the visual record that I keep, that I print out, so that later if they say, "Oh, we didn't say that, we didn't offer that, we didn't do that," you've got it right then and there. And that's why you wanted to record. But if it took you four reps with a problem, and then the fifth person was a supervisor, and nobody was helping you, and the supervisor hung up on you, what should you do? You should hang up on that cell phone carrier. There's lots of competition in the marketplace. Take your business to someone else. That's your real power. There's really nobody to complain to. Use your market power to your advantage.
I wonder why he was talking to the fraud center, though.
I have no clue what that angle was about. Okay. But obviously, they've made it clear by how they dealt with him that they did not value his business, and so he shouldn't let them have his valuable dollars.
Albert in Mississippi says, "I've recently seen tons of advertisements for Index Universal Life Insurance policies and tried doing research into them, but I'm just met with the same barrage of advertisements and videos. I was wondering if they are a scam or something to actually invest in that could set my family on a good financial track." How do you feel, Clark?
Weak need. Okay, this is yet another flavor of the nightmare of universal life insurance. Universal life insurance is a con job on the American people. It is considered to be a legal product, but it is unadulterated garbage. The indexed universal life is the latest flavor that the insurance industry is pushing. And the idea is, what could possibly be better than this? You get the returns of a stock market index without the risk of losing all your money. That's how it's pitched. What they don't tell you is you don't get the return of the stock market. You're under what's known as a collar, where you only receive a portion of the return of the stock market in a good year, and you don't get what is perhaps as equally important as the rise in the stock market over the years. You don't get the dividends. But what you get in return is ultra-high expenses in the index universal life, and you get some downside protection where they cap how much money you can lose in a particular year. The tax treatment is questionable, and with a universal life policy of any flavor, you can end up with what's known as a capital call. If the universal life policy does not perform as expected, you can end up with a tax time bomb and capital calls, meaning you have to come up with big money or your policy can be wiped out. This is a horrific product that is only pushed because of the enormous, humongous, extreme commissions that the agents earn selling it. But the craziest thing of all, in addition to the tax time bomb, is generally people looking at these are not maxing out other tax-free ways of saving money, not tax advantage potentially, but tax-free, like ultra-low-cost Roth IRAs, employer-provided Roth 401ks, even index funds in a regular investment account will usually outperform net of taxes what you would have in one of these junky universal life policies of various flavors. If you need life insurance to protect your family, go read our briefing on level term insurance. Do not mix investing and insurance together, because the only winner when you do that is the high commission salesperson that conned you into buying the trash.
Perry in Colorado says, I recently received my auto insurance renewal and was surprised to see a $100 surcharge for my credit. I have excellent credit, 820 plus, and have never missed a payment, so I was ticked off. I started looking and was able to find the same exact coverage for less than half with what I've been paying with a reputable company. Loyalty does not pay off. Shop around regularly for insurance products to make sure you're getting the best value.
So Perry, do you know that right now is the most important time ever to shop around for auto and homeowners? There has never been a time that loyalty to a particular auto or homeowners insurer is punished more than right now. Insurers, a lot of them are on the ropes financially. They've lost untold billions of dollars as claims in both the auto area and homeowners at the same time have both outstripped the policies they were collecting. And so these insurers have reported very large losses and are pushing up premiums at very high rates. Other insurers have been able to underwrite better. They've been able, the people who decide what is good business and what's not, and what premiums they need to be profitable, different insurers have been able to handle that better than others. So you got a lot of insurers that are in this big hole from all the losses they had, and now they're trying to make up that hole on the backs of their policyholders. Other insurers, because they price better, aren't having to run the premiums up. The insurer you've switched to is considered in the industry to be the most sophisticated of all insurers on calculating risk on auto. And so they have not had to go to these big increases, which is why you're getting a quote so much lower from them. But regardless of who you're with, shopping around is very important. Homeowners, I mean, if you live in certain areas of Florida, California, Louisiana, the Carolinas, on the coast, it may be just a matter of trying to survive finding homeowners. But in other places, shopping for homeowners is as applicable as what I just said and what we just heard from Perry about shopping for auto insurance. Coming up ahead, I have a crazy story for you about AI gone crazy, what you need to know. A guy named Jack had a sad loss in his family. His grandmother suddenly died. He wanted to fly to the funeral, which was almost immediate. And he starts shopping for airfare. And there's something that used to be very common that is very rare today called bereavement fares. And some airlines still offer bereavement fares where if you can provide documentation that there's a medical emergency in your family of a particular close relative or a death of a close relative, the airline will give you a discount on a last-minute ticket called a bereavement fare. So Jack's grandmom passes away. He wants to fly to the funeral, shops around, and the best airfare, the funeral was in Canada, the best airfare to get to it that he found using a bereavement fare was Air Canada. Well, how did he find the bereavement fare and the rules for it? Air Canada has an AI chatbot on its website. And you see these at different websites now. I mean, imagine trying to get through that chatbot on Amazon. Oh my goodness. There should be smarter programmers there. But anyway, I digress. So he asked the chatbot how to qualify for a bereavement fare and is doing the chat and all that. And it says, okay, so within 90 days of you buy the ticket, the last minute ticket, within 90 days, file the proof of the bereavement and we will refund you. In his case, it was like $600 or whatever. So Jack gets home from the funeral, submits the paperwork to Air Canada, and Air Canada tells him to pound sand that bereavement fares have to be qualified for in advance, and that's it. So then he writes back to Air Canada, customer no service, and provides a copy because he printed out the chat just in case anything happened. And Air Canada said, oh, we don't care. Yeah, so the chat did another crazy thing today, didn't it? Oh, that AI stuff. And didn't give him back the money. So he did the smart thing. He sued them in small claims court, where the judge said, oh, this is so funny. Air Canada's hired gun lawyers said, the chatbot is a separate corporate entity, and Air Canada is not responsible for the chatbot, which the judge then said, oh, aren't you people funny? And ruled for Jack and gave Jack the money back. Air Canada, in response later, their media spokespeople, because they got deluged with media from around the world because it was such an unusual thing that they were trying to claim they weren't responsible for their own chatbot on their own website, first picked up by tech blogs, and then it got in the general media, TV, the whole bit. Air Canada was defiant to the end. I mean, I just can't believe the corporate statements they put out. Where do they get these corporate spokespeople? But anyway, the point is, and this is something you're going to see again and again, AI is a fun tool at this point, but not an accurate one. I mean, you look at, if you use Google and you have the Google AI stuff feeding back responses to your inquiries, they are, as they are many other places, they're very inaccurate. The results you're getting back, not accurate. And scamsters are learning how to manipulate the results coming at search engines. So this is something that's so much buzz about. And AI will have a lot of good things about it and bad things about it. Just know that in the information space, AI is not close to ready, and you cannot rely upon it, as Jack found out. But he did get his money back.
And we, our Consumer Action Center, wanted to make sure that you mentioned that when you Google a company's name, like looking for their phone number, you definitely should not trust that.
Never. This is a never rule. Never Google a company's phone number, because those results are wrong. I don't know if it's 100% of the time or 99% of the time, you are going to have scamsters who pop up, who figured out how to manipulate search results, and the phone numbers there take you directly to scammers, not to the company you're trying to reach. Go to the website of a company itself, and they try to hide their phone numbers, but you should be able to find them with some work, and then you call them, but never trust a phone number from any search, ever, not ever.
All right. I hope I'm saying this right. A call in Georgia says, my son is going to France for a summer program.
France.
I wanted to get him some euros. What is the best place to exchange dollars to euros?
Okay. So do not get your son any euro before he gets to France. Because in the United States, getting euro in advance is a complete rip. Don't know how old your son is. If he's 13 or above, if you have any Charles Schwab accounts in your family, you can get him a Charles Schwab debit card that he can use. And this is true for around the world. He can use it fee-free to get money from ATMs or even for purchases where he pays in euro and you get the banker's buying rate on exchange. Now, remember, I just said debit card. You know, I don't like debit cards. But in this case, it is a good possibility. Don't do business with Schwab, have no interest. Look at the Revolut card. Revolut has a stored value card, I guess is the best way to describe it, that offers phenomenal exchange rates. And you can give your son, you can sign up for a Revolut card. You can have a Revolut card. And he can use it in France, travels to any other countries in Europe. He can use it freely. You can deposit money as your son needs it, and he can use it for purchases, which is really what you're going to do in France. So almost everywhere you go in France, people pay electronically, mostly GPay and Apple Pay, more GPay than Apple Pay in France. Or he can present the actual plastic card. And it is a superior way to have money overseas, not physical euro, but your son can go to an ATM, get some, and know that he has walking around cash when he needs it. But very seldom in any of the mid-size or large cities in France would you ever see people paying for things in actual euro. In addition, there are various money transfer services. Wise is probably the wisest choice that you could send your son money if you needed to send it to him in France very affordably. But neither of these are as good as the Schwab card or the Revolut.
USAA also, if you're a USAA member of their banking, their card allows you a certain number of withdrawals anywhere in the world.
For a month free, I think?
Not sure the
exact
number.
I think it's
number.
For a month.
And then when my daughter was in France, she did a program last summer. I loaded onto her Apple Pay my card that has no foreign transaction fees, and she paid me back for what she spent on it. So that helped save some money there too.
And she was able to use Apple Pay pretty
used
much
it everywhere.
Every single place you go. Although in Europe, Google, Android's more dominant. Both work just fine most everywhere.
DP on YouTube said, Clark, what are your thoughts on EV versus plug-in hybrid public charging etiquette? I've gone to public charging spots in our Leaf and found hybrids using the chargers. Fortunately, we've never been stranded, but we've come close enough to never count on public charging. It's just not there yet. We'll continue to home charge on solar until our Leaf is dead.
So DP, this is something that only came on my radar last year, is there's this unhappiness by people who are in fully electric vehicles against people who have the plug-in hybrids that want to charge, because the plug-in hybrid can drive just fine on a road trip, just not as good a fuel economy if it's not charged, where a fully electric, if it's out of electrons, it's out of electrons, and it's basically a giant battery that's stationary. So this is more about how charging infrastructure in the United States is a joke right now for anything other than Tesla. And that's why all the automakers are signing deals with Tesla to be able to use their very efficient and reliable charging network. instead of these other charging networks that are close to useless. This is a problem capitalism will solve, not the government. Capitalism is going to solve this. And charging for road trips will be very reliable, quicker than you might imagine, but slower than you might want if you already own an EV. So, Krista, you've taken your Tesla on road trip after road trip after road trip. Have you ever had a close call where you have not been able to charge? Or
no. No, because I plan it out in advance.
Well, the car plans it out.
Well, speaking of etiquette, when I first got my Y in 2020, I didn't know you're not supposed to park right next to another Tesla charging. You're supposed to get as far away as possible. You know, there's that, because I guess it affects the charging speed.
Right.
And so, yeah, there's all sorts of etiquette issues around charging.
But you know, 90-something percent of charging for electrics is done at people's homes.
Yeah, that's where I do mine.
Like with the solar panels.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jason in Georgia says, I have a 2013 Kia Optima hybrid that I bought new in January of 2014. When it was time to replace it, I planned on going full electric with my next vehicle. In January, on the 10-year anniversary, I started getting hybrid system warnings. I took the car into Kia and was told it could take 4 weeks to diagnose it. I was finally told the power relay and batteries were bad. It was 1 month out of the warranty with manufacturer, and the cost would be $15,000. After some digging, we found that we bought an extended warranty from a third party. I know we normally wouldn't have, but this time my mistake paid off. Unfortunately, while it was covered under the additional warranty, they only cover repairs up to the value of the car. The NADA on my car, NADA on my car, is only $9,000, but at 80,000 miles, it's still a baby. It sounds like I'm stuck, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. It makes me second guess a full electric, as those batteries are closer to $25,000.
Okay, so Jason, plug-in hybrid batteries should not be anywhere near $15,000, not close. You're being taken advantage of on that quote because a full electric's batteries aren't that much money anymore. So the cost of batteries is going down and down and down and down. If you love that Optima, you don't want to take advantage of the fact that you have this third-party warranty to pay you market price. You may be able to find at one of the junkyards a wrecked Kia Optima hybrid that has a battery that's still solid. Buy that battery, have it put in by an independent mechanic, since obviously the Kia dealer wants to charge you an arm, a leg, and a foot, maybe both arms, both legs. I mean, it's crazy. A $15,000 quote is insane. As for going fully electric, you know, we've moved out of the pioneering stage with electric to the settler stage. And I got my first fully electric in 2011. The first one, the battery pack was awful, unreliable. The manufacturer, in that case, Nissan, did not stand behind it. And I've not had any problems since. And it's rare that somebody has a defective battery pack that would not be covered by warranty. The warranties usually are 8 to 10 years on the batteries. So I would not necessarily fret because the science that the brilliant engineers are doing and scientists on batteries, they're getting better, more reliable, safer, and lower cost. So I know it's not popular right now to say that electric vehicles are a great thing to buy. But, you know, that creates a buying opportunity now that people are suddenly not into them. Ford just did a big price cut on the Mach-E version of the Mustang that they had priced way too high, and the prices keep coming down. So the marketplace, because people have soured on electrics, offering deals, I think it's a great opportunity to grab that deal. And thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast. I hope you have an absolutely wonderful rest of your day. Remember what we're devoted to, what we're about. You learning ways to save more, spend less, and don't let anyone ever, ever rip you off.